from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. How attention-grabbing is the U.S. election to people in Asia, Africa, Europe, or South America? We'll talk with experts from around the world to get international perspectives on the United States election. That's coming up next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this Forum Hour, we take up the question of how the present presidential election here in the United States is being viewed from outside our nation's borders. And in the course of the hour, we'll get perspectives from around the world. First, we want to hear a little collage with an audio that came to us courtesy from PRI's The World.
I think the president has to put some confidence onto the people that are working with the economy.
I think that the president doesn't have as much effect on the economy as he'd like to think he is. I think it's the other way around. The economy runs the presidency.
Always the president will claim to be the leader of the free world. To claim that mantle, you have to take that responsibility and you have to live it.
Well, those are the voices of Lisbon attorney Maria Moraes, London financier Oliver Woodlard, and novelist and climate change activist Gregory Normanton, based in Manchester, England. And it came to us, as I said, courtesy of PRI's The World. And speaking of PRI's The World, Marco Werman is with us from London. He's senior producer with Public Radio International's The World. And welcome, Marco Werman.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you with us. I wanted to begin by getting a overall picture from you, if that's even possible, when you think of all the range of European responses to this election. But there was an article in the New York Times back on October 23rd, and essentially it seemed to take the position that throughout Western, Eastern, Northern, Southern Europe, there's less interest than there was in 2008 when we had a black man and a woman running for the first time, and maybe the hopes were not nearly as high as they were then by any stretch.
Yeah, I think it is kind of hard to kind of get a solid picture of the whole continent. But let me just kind of take apart what I've been hearing. And it is tricky. It is pretty nuanced. I mean, if you do go back 4 years, a lot of people across the continent, and I think we've got a pretty good representative view here in London because it's such a multicultural city, they saw the Obama trope of change as just that. They believed it was real change. But I don't think they feel so psyched now. They don't feel so elated. At least that's kind of what I've been hearing. I mean, if you ask people here on the left, there is still some residual love for Barack Obama as a representative of what the U.S. can do, how a nation, our nation has evolved, you know, electing a black man after the notorious years of Jim Crow and the hard-fought battles for civil rights in the 60s. And that history kind of still resonates greatly here because, I mean, if you take the U.K., a candid dialogue about race has not occurred here, and many wish it would. Not that the U.S. has had a candid discussion on the subject, but I think many here see the election of a black president as a huge step forward, even if racial issues haven't been fully broached in our country. On the other hand, if you take a step back with some of the more sober progressives here, take writer Aminata Forna. She is half Sierra Leonean, half Scottish, and she points out that Obama really is half black and half white. And in Africa, they see that a mixed-race person is really someone who comes from privilege. So observers like Aminata Forna say, ridiculous. We never expected Obama based on his race. We never expected him just wave a magic wand and make all the hot-button issues of the Bush years go away. Look at Guantanamo, they say, still open. The same people ask, what about the U.S. and its use of drones killing so many innocent people while, yes, eliminating a few high-value terrorist targets? And in this country where the National Health Service covers all health care through taxes. Those who followed the Obamacare business still can't believe that even after all that, the U.S. still doesn't have government-supported health care. I mean, Amina Tafourna and other such voices are kind of incensed when they see British liberals falling over themselves, praising Obama because he is a Democrat politician who happens to be black and ergo he'll do great things. And they haven't seen that. Also, remember the way the political compass has spun here in Europe in the past 2 years. Since 2010, you've got European presidents and prime ministers removed in elections here in Britain, in France, Ireland, Greece, Italy, Spain, to mention several. And there are more. But, you know, even with that, out with the old, in with the new, and some of the dissatisfaction with Obama, I don't think any of that has translated into support for Romney.
Well, it's nuanced, as you suggest, to a great degree, I'm sure. Though, again, I want to reference this article in the New York Times because it said there's disillusionment with foreign policy in many countries, and it noted even Germany. But in England, in the UK, that is, I'm struck by what you said about the kind of reflection of seeing their own concern about a racial conversation not taking place. And in so many European countries, there seems to be, when there is interest, when there is coverage of the U.S. election, looking at it as a kind of Rorschach or as a mirror for what is either lacking or what is strange in their own country. For example, in Russia, they're talking about it as a mudslinging brawl and a beauty contest. And Izvestia, particularly in the Russian newspaper, said, even though Russia's been muted about this election, this is not to the advantage of Russia to have Mitt Romney elected. And they've been very strong about that. So different countries have been somewhat partisan, really.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, if I can just cite an opinion poll that the Guardian newspaper cited this morning, widespread dislike of Romney and residual, if no longer starry-eyed, support for Obama among Europeans. Just 5% of those polled in France, Germany, and Britain had a good opinion of Romney. Only 4% of Germans said a President Romney would make them better disposed towards the U.S., while 12 times that figure took the opposite view. 2 in 5 French people said a Romney victory would turn them more against the U.S., while only 5% said they would be happier with him in the White House. By contrast, 87% of Germans said they would vote for Obama, while in France, 67% described him as their president of choice. So it's clear that Obama is still looked to as the person Europeans would like to see in the White House, even though the idea of U.S. presidential leadership isn't necessarily what they have. It's not their dream scenario right now.
Marco Werman with us from London is senior producer and host of Public Radio International's The World. And boy, in London, there was a strong reaction to Mitt Romney's remarks about the Olympics, wasn't there?
Yeah, remind me what that was. Well, the Olympics seems so long ago.
He made a kind of disparaging remark about he had headed up the Olympics here in the United States.
And
it was perhaps a way of saying, I know a lot about foreign policy and maybe I did a better job than they're doing in England. But there was, according to our press at least, a great deal of umbrage taken by the Brits.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's hard to find a lot of people who say, I wish the United States would elect Romney. Pretty much everybody to a person that I've met, aside from the people who say, we don't want to talk politics, we don't care about the United States, everybody wants to see that I've spoken with Obama reelected.
And again, we're talking to Marco Werman, senior producer and host of Public Radio International's The World. I want to go and examine things a little bit closer to home here. David Ayon is U.S. Director of Binational Focus Mexico and Foque Mexico Project. He's at Loyola Marymount University and a senior advisor to the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and recently traveled to Mexico for a conference about the U.S. election and was also in Argentina in August, and can give us a perspective on, what's not only how the election is viewed in Mexico, but maybe even farther down in South America. David, good to have you aboard.
It's a pleasure, Michael.
They're talking about immigration in this election for the most part, aren't they, in Mexico?
Yes, there is. I would say there's lots of parallels to what Marco said about Europe. There's less interest than before for several reasons, but of course, they pay a lot more attention to what happens in the United States, in Mexico, and in Latin America than we do to what happens there.
There's also perhaps more sympathy for Obama still. They know that many Latino voters are going his way up here.
No question about that. I would say the biggest difference, in spite of all the parallels between, I would say, Latin America in general, looking across the board, and what Marco had to say about Europe a certain bemusement, a lessening of interest. There's also a palpable sense that the U.S. is less important as a country, that it's in decline as a superpower. But there's this big chunk of Latin America, starting with Mexico, but going way beyond it, Central America and the Caribbean and even parts of South America, that do see American politics and the relationship with the United States through the prism of their co-nationals, their expatriates or their diasporas in the United States. And on that score, there's no question but that Obama gets far greater sympathy than Romney does, because he took such hard positions on immigration.
Except they like Romney in Chile, don't they?
Well, I would surmise one thing that you could say across the board. People who are business-oriented just have a practical stake in having a strong U.S. economy, importing their products, investing in their countries, and probably more than any other country would be Chile, because it also has a free trade agreement with the United States, and because of its particular history, it certainly elites there, to a certain extent also in Colombia, because we've had a rather close relationship forged in the drug war with Colombia. I don't see polls on this question for Chile. I do see it for Colombia. Probably the greatest level of sympathy that you have in the region for Romney of the polls that we have, but it's still not very high.
Well, as you go farther into South America, it would seem that immigration and maybe this election becomes less of interest. You were all the way down in Argentina, and I know I was reading recently that in Brazil there was shock over the end of the subsidy to PBS. They love Big Bird, apparently, in Brazil. So that played in the newspapers to a greater degree than one might imagine. But how about when you get down to Argentina?
Well, there's a number of peculiarities involved. There's also a very strong sense. I mean, they're on the other side of Brazil. And there's a very strong sense that South America is really charting its own course anyway, and that the United States doesn't matter that much, or doesn't matter very much. But nevertheless, there is still a longing for some attention from the U.S. And this comes out, I think, in fact, if anything, the most recent dominant issue for Latin American observers from Argentina all the way up has been the fact that Latin America figures so small in the U.S. election and in the presidential debates. This had particular resonance, I think, in Argentina, because Argentina got skipped by Obama in the trip that he made to South America, where he went to neighboring countries. He went to Chile, he went to Brazil, but he didn't go to Argentina. And it actually led to something of a diplomatic flap. The Argentine government wound up seizing an official U.S. government plane as a sort of payback over that.
David Ayón again is U.S. Director of Binational Focus, Mexico, and Foque Mexico Project. Speaking about attention, I want to bring John Burnett into this, who's a correspondent in Nairobi, Kenya, and he's on the line with us. He is correspondent, of course, for National Public Radio. John, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome to you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we were talking to David Ayón about Argentina and some of the countries in South America feeling they weren't getting the proper or the amount of attention they wanted from this present administration. That's particularly true to a great extent in Africa, where Obama remains very popular. I mean, there was a good deal of concern that his 20-hour trip back in 2009 wasn't enough attention to the continent.
Not at all. I mean, it's funny because I was listening to your guest talk about how Latin America felt slighted. Well, Africa feels even more slighted, believe me.
Yeah.
Especially because they had higher expectations. And as we all know, the president's father, Barack Hussein Obama Sr., is from the Nyanza province, which is over in the western part of the country. And people in Kenya talk about Obama as a Kenyan. I'm sure that would give, soothe all the birthers, but they really talk about, like, you know, he has African blood and he should have paid his attention, and you can't forget your relatives and where you come from. And so symbolically, I think they've been really deeply disappointed that not just that he hasn't gotten any closer than Ghana to East Africa, but that his State Department has not shown a kind of a forceful Africa policy, at least before June, when Hillary Clinton announced a new initiative for Africa.
So it's safe to say, in fact, Reuters did say that they feel kind of jilted by Obama, that the Obama fever has cooled despite the fact that they may see him as a native son or one of their own?
Yes. It's funny. It has and it hasn't. I think, you know, they did expect to see some sort of aggressive aid package for Kenya. And you know, they thought that he would treat Kenya with sort of, you know, a special favoritism in the way that, you know, the last third of his book, Dreams for My Father, was all about this incredibly important trip that he took, where he sort of learned where his roots were and connected all his relatives here. And so he's just, you know, been just this absence here. On the other hand, I've been in Africa now for about 5 months, and in about five countries in East Africa. And when Africans come up and they want to break the ice, they ask you about the president, and they say, why hasn't he come? They say, is he going to win re-election? Or they want to talk about a cousin they have who is from Kisumu, who is a personal friend of you know, the Obama family. And so there's this intimacy and this enormous pride that you detect among Africans. And I think there's also a hope that in his second term, for whatever reason, he will visit, he will show more forceful interest in this part of the world. I mean, you even see this among columnists who, you know, just say it's if he wins re-election, it's a foregone conclusion that he, by God, you know, come better visit the land of his paternal family.
And again, John Burnett with us from Nairobi is interim correspondent for East Africa in Nairobi, Kenya, with National Public Radio. Shelby Talhami is Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development, University of Maryland. He's senior fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, former advisor to the U.S. mission to the United Nations and the Iraq Study Group. And Shelby Talhami, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
So it was a pleasure.
And you were recently in Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
What are they saying about the election in Jeddah?
There's certainly in Jeddah and Riyadh and Dhahran, where I spoke, in all places, there's a lot of interest in the American election. In fact, you know, most of my lectures there, the overwhelming majority, I gave a number of them, and with the exception of one, they were all about the election, you know, what they tell us about American society per se, and then obviously what are the consequences for American policy. And they were certainly very interested, particularly in what are the likely consequences for the Arab-Israel issues, the first question, then Iran and Syria. Those are the three that were on their minds. What is very interesting to me is that, you know, they're somewhat cynical. They really don't have a lot of expectations. I think in some ways they feel let down by the promises of President Obama when he first came in, and they had high hopes, and then they feel they soured on him. And we saw that in the public opinion polls that I conducted over the past few years, from the first one right after his election to last year when his numbers declined. But as they got exposed to Romney over the past few months, they're far more concerned about Romney. And so in some ways, you can say they're hoping that Romney doesn't win. It's not like they're embracing Obama per se, particularly, you know, what Romney has been saying on the Israel question, their assumption about his closeness to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, and a sense that they've been getting a lot of coverage, actually, in the Arab media. That's many of Romney's advisors, some of the same people who advised George W. Bush. And George W. Bush was certainly the most disliked leader in the Arab world over the past half a decade.
I'm sure that statements by Governor Romney have not endeared him in the Arab world, as you've suggested. But it's curious, because of his close relationship with Bibi Netanyahu, that both Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post have officially been neutral in this election.
Yes, and I think this is the thing about the Israeli public. I mean, I think you have a lot of people among the Israeli elites who see it differently, but the general public obviously is making a decision in Israel that's a little bit different. And some of it is about certain fears. You know, I've written about this before, where when you look at the Arab public and the Israeli public looking at American election, they certainly both see it principally through the prism of the conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict. And Israelis had grown very comfortable with Bush's kind of narrative about a clash of civilization, because after 9/11, many Israelis felt concerned that the American public would blame them for the Arab and Muslim anger with the U.S. And so Bush provided a framework that moved away from that. And when Obama was putting a yet another paradigm, which reached out to the Muslim world and countered the clash of civilization, it was actually a bigger threat than to them than people assumed. And I think at this point, when you look at reports, at least of American citizens who live in Israel, are overwhelmingly voting for Romney, regardless of the position of some of the, you know, newspapers on this issue.
What about, can you give us a quick sense of what you think is going on in Pakistan with respect to this election? Because there's been a lot of coverage of it, and coverage of it particularly from the standpoint of their leaders colluding with our leaders on the drones.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at, you know, the public opinion poll, global public opinion poll that was conducted by my colleague Steve Cullen and Pippa, you know, where you see that, you know, they did that for the BBC World Service, you know, when you showed really in almost every region of the world, people want Obama over Romney. But in Pakistan was a few places where that wasn't true.
Well, excuse me, Governor Romney said that maybe we should have consulted Pakistan on the bin Laden raid.
And you know, that's one thing. And obviously his before the election a while ago on comments related to the drones as well, you know, that are not popular, obviously, in Pakistan or, for that matter, in Arab and Muslim countries broadly. And I would even argue around the world, not particularly popular. So they have their own, you know, narrow prism through which they're looking at this. And I would, you know, say that, you know, across Arab and Muslim countries, there are divisions. I mean, people here, I think, often misunderstand and think that because Obama has roots in a Muslim family, therefore, you know, that's, people are embracing him. Actually, we haven't found that. I mean, in the, you know, 4 years ago, as he was running for election for the first time, I did a poll in the Arab world about who the Arab public preferred for president at the time. Hillary Clinton was still in the running. And Obama got only 18% of people who preferred him, 13% said Hillary Clinton, only 6% said John McCain. Those are the three who were still in the running at that time. And most of the others said none of the above. So and Obama didn't really get a warm response in Arab countries until after he was elected and the first few months when he started making all kinds of gestures and people were rewarding him, particularly on the pulling out from Iraq. But still, there are people, especially in the ruling elite, especially in the Gulf and Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states, who have traditionally been more comfortable working with Republican administrations. And I think, you know, among those elites, you are going to find people who prefer Romney. That's not necessarily true at the level of the general public.
Again, Shibli Talhami with us from Maryland this morning, from College Park, is Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development. Let's hear from you. If you have friends or relatives abroad, what kind of responses are you getting from them? What kind of notions are they presenting to you about how they see and how the press over there, wherever there may be, is presenting the election over here in the United States? We'd like to hear from you, and you can join us at our toll-free number and are welcome to do that now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your call, so feel free to contribute any questions or comments you might have and any perceptions of how the American election is being viewed abroad. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any of your questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or go to our Facebook page. And, of course, you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We'll continue. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're devoting this hour to views from abroad of the presidential election and getting international perspectives on the U.S. election from literally people who are joining us from all over the world. We spoke earlier to Marco Werman, senior producer and host of Public Radio International's The World, with us from London. And David Ayon is with us as well. He's the U.S. director of the Binational Focus Mexico Project. We also talked with John Burnett, and he's with us from Nairobi, interim correspondent for East Africa in Nairobi, Kenya, for National Public Radio, and Shelby Telhami, Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland and senior fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. And we want to bring Melissa Chan into this as well. She's John S. Knight Journalism Fellow at Stanford, currently on leave from Al Jazeera, and she was a China correspondent for 5 years. Melissa's here with us to talk about China. It's certainly still the biggest competitor of the United States economically, and some feel maybe gaining ground every day as we speak. I should mention that in Japan, there is, as Marco Werman suggested, there are in many countries ways of looking at this election from their own perspective. And in Japan, they're looking at particularly the possibility of building a two-party system. But I would say in China, Melissa Chan, the coverage has been muted because, as we heard, we're going to be talking about the 18th Party Congress, and that's been dominating China for one thing, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's happening this week. The 18th Party Congress begins this Thursday in China. And while we know this isn't an election in China, we all know who's going to be the president and premier of the country. It's been high drama in China politically over the past year. So, you know, anyone who's a Chinese citizen who's engaged and who is interested in politics will be looking at their own country. I mean, I should add, of course, that there is censorship in China, but there are ways of trying to figure out what's going on in terms of the leadership transition problems. So the U.S. election very much is a back burner issue, considering what's also happening in China this week.
Well, the leadership in China presumably is following us pretty closely, on the other hand.
Yes, exactly. I was just going to say the exact same thing, which is that from the Chinese leadership perspective, they are watching the U.S. election. But one thing is that they deal with the elections like we do every 4 years. They know the drill, and we've seen the negative campaigning. Both Romney and Obama have had giving China a hard time, talking about its currency manipulation, what have you. But if you look at the historical trend and what's always happened, so it's back to business once the American president is elected. So from the Chinese government's perspective, they don't expect a major shift or change in policy. They just haven't seen that kind of change over the past, you know, decades or so. And, you know, they do understand that, you know, they understand the democratic process in the United States where the politicians have to say things to the voting public that, you know, might not necessarily comport with their behavior after they become the president.
Well, as you said earlier, there was a lot of bashing of China, particularly more, I would say, from Governor Romney. And how that plays in China as opposed to, let's say, President Obama selling weapons to Taiwan or visiting with the Dalai Lama is a curious point in itself, particularly since, as you suggest, there isn't what we would describe as really full coverage.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the truth of the matter is that most ordinary Chinese citizens can't really differentiate between the two U.S. politicians in terms of their policy on China. People in China, especially the 5 years when I was there and I would talk to many people about their perspectives on the United States, they really just view the United States as a very monolithic entity that is, you know, unfortunately these days with the rising nationalism in China, they view it as a competition between China and the United States, and China, there's a great sense of China rising, and that this is the beginning of the end for the United States. So you have this kind of complicated relationship. Obviously, you know, people who understand the trade issues and the complicated economic dependence, interdependence of these two countries have a different perspective. But in terms of ordinary citizens, if you were to ask them, well, you know, what do you think about Romney? What do you think about Obama? I think there's a lot of confusion about where these two politicians stand on certain issues and their attitudes on China.
And again, Melissa Chen is John S. Knight, journalism fellow at Stanford, currently on leave from Al Jazeera, and she Al Jazeera English, that is, and she was their China correspondent for 5 years. You can join this conversation. We'd like to know what your thoughts are about how the American elections are viewed from abroad. And if you know somebody outside of this country and you are getting messages either through social network or other sources, let us know what they are. In fact, David comments online and says, as a recent immigrant to the United States, having moved here from New Zealand, it's interesting seeing the process up close. The organization and rules seem to have been designed to make voting hard to understand and time-consuming. My wife's voting instructions are some of the most complex documents I've ever seen, designed to be used by an average person. No wonder the country in 2008, in a surprise historic turnout, ranks 138th out of 169 countries for turnout. And let me go back, if I may, Marco Werman, to you. Roddy asks on our Facebook page, or actually says, do a quick search of the Internet, and you can find misinformed or uninformed supporters of both candidates. How educated are the citizens of the world in their support or dissent of either candidate and his record and proposals or policies?
Obviously, it depends on whom you ask. But I find people here are incredibly well-informed. I mean, they read the paper. They're interested in current events. That they are curious about what it all means for them, because what happens in the United States has a direct impact on them. On the other hand, and maybe you have this tape ready, this Martin Eiermann, this German journalist that we can play in here. I mean, there is more and more, and this kind of goes back to what David was saying earlier about people starting to turn away, just for practical reasons, away from the big U.S. sphere of influence, that it doesn't maybe it's not as relevant as it used to be. I mean, people are well informed, but because they're well informed, that also implies that they're looking elsewhere for influence. So I was at St. Pancras Station here in London the other day, speaking with people who are headed to the European continent. Thought that would be a good place to kind of do a short canvas and just find out, you know, from them how much they look to the United States for leadership now. These are people who do business. Again, they're much more practical about the role of the U.S. president. And to put all of this into perspective, I met a German journalist who studied at Harvard. His name is Martin Eiermann. And he kind of warns about relying too much on the American model. Let's hear that.
Well, let's hear
it. The kind of American model of writing constitutions and writing economic policy is not necessarily the model that a lot of countries are now following. That there's a lot of things going on in the world that are not influenced and not driven and not led by the United States. And to me, it seems like the natural reaction to that kind of world order to me would be to embrace it and try to find your role within it, instead of saying, if we're not leading you, you know, good luck. Good luck, you're on your own.
Again, that's journalist Martin Eiermann, an advisory member of the communications arm of Occupy London. And we have some other tapes. Thanks again to you for them, Marco Werman, which I'd like to hear. And maybe you can set these up for us. Just a couple of excerpts, again, from different voices in different parts of Europe. One from a Greek comedian.
Yeah, right. Katerina Vrana, a Greek comedian who lives here in London. I'm not even going to say anything about this. Just let her talk, because she's very funny and she makes a really good point.
I'd love if the U.S. president could help Greece in some way. But if it ends up being a president that not only helps Greece but damages Greece, I'd be super annoyed, because I had nothing to do with that election. There's no way I can influence that election. There's no way I can call someone in Minnesota and go, dude, what are you doing? Vote for the other guy. I always see the States as a very kind of good-natured giant that wants to be really helpful but tramples on everything while turning around to go, oh, I'll help you. Oh, I'm sorry. Things are like, oh, you need freedom. I'll give you freedom. Oh, I'm sorry. That kind of thing.
Katerina Vrana.
Yeah, I got to say it.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I saw her stand up the other night. She is very, very funny stuff. And somewhere in Los Angeles, there's a Valley girl who attended her gigs in L.A. last year. And her ears have to be burning, that young lady, and not in a good way.
Well, we also have to consult with our colleague Garrison Keillor about how much dude is used in Minnesota. I would have concerns
yeah.
about that.
Yeah. Get a reality check on that.
Yeah, and maybe listeners want to respond to what they're hearing here, too, in terms of the international focus on U.S. presidential elections, or let us know what you're hearing. Again, we welcome your phone calls, and it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also register any thoughts you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, or go to our Facebook page, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. Stephen tweets, in Europe, people like Barack Obama, despite the fact that he has largely ignored that continent in deep turmoil and crisis now. Well, they too feel like they're being ignored, Marco?
Sorry, I was distracted by some production stuff here. Say again.
Well, we've been talking about, you know, Africans feeling ignored and Mexicans feeling ignored by this administration. Europeans, a listener tweets, feel ignored. Would you confirm?
I think Europeans... Not necessarily ignore, except maybe on the economic crisis, where a lot of people say, hey, a lot of this started in the U.S. with AIG and with Lehman Brothers, and they kind of feel like it rippled across the pond, and now they've got to deal with it. And some people say, you know, maybe the U.S. should get its economic house in order first, then they can help us. A lot of other people I spoke with say, you know, the U.S. needs to come to our assistance right now. So there's a kind of a mix of people feeling the U.S. is ignoring them, other people kind of say it's time to move on. I mean, one woman I spoke with who's a personal shopper at Galerie Lafayette in Paris said, you know, the U.S. is no longer the horse that we want to, you know, hook our economic wagon to. We're looking to the BRIC countries. We're looking to Brazil, Russia, China, and India. So kind of the U.S. time at the economic top of the heap, even though it's still the world's largest economy by GDP, that time is kind of slowly disappearing.
And let me go back, if I may, Shibley, to Hami, to you. What about this view that we heard from that Greek comedian, you know, America being the bumbling giant?
Well, there obviously that comedian said that America is well-intentioned. I think a lot of people in the Arab world and the Muslim countries don't think America is well-intentioned. I think the most common interpretation of American foreign policy is the U.S. is really trying to dominate or certainly oil and help Israel. So they don't trust the intention. They don't think just the U.S. is meaning well but unable to do it. But among those who do think the U.S. is meaning well, and there are a few, still think the U.S. doesn't know how to do it. And I think that, is obvious in relationship to something like the Syria crisis, where Arabs are really, struggling to figure out what to do. Most Arabs, 90% of them, according to my polls, certainly favor the people against the government. They want to see the Assad regime perhaps removed, but they don't want the U.S. to do it. I mean, even though obviously they're struggling, they want help, they don't know what to do, but there's a certain sense that if the U.S. gets involved, it'll get worse.
Do they think, for example, that Romney would be more likely to get involved in trying to topple Assad and help those against him than Obama has been?
Actually, this is an interesting question, because this is one of the questions I typically was asked. I don't think they know exactly. I think that the general interpretation in the Arab press, and I have to say that I have a hand in it because I've been commenting a lot on the Arab press, and I will be doing more on Al Jazeera tomorrow for the returns, and I've certainly been doing it on the major Arab TV channels where people are asking regularly about what are the differences on this issue. I think what has been projected is very similar to what has been projected here, that despite the talk about possibly aiding Syrian opposition, there's really very little difference in the posture between Obama and Romney on Syria. I think the one question is more about Iran, whether there would be a difference on the Iran issue. And I think some people closer to the governments in the Gulf who might think that maybe Romney would be tougher on Iran, but they all understand that the American public mood is very much anti-war, and that even if any administration, whether it's Obama or Romney, want to be tougher on Iran, that seems to be something that precludes any imminent war because of the general public in the U.S.
And I should mention that Peter writes on our website that I said that neither Haaretz nor the Jerusalem Post officially endorsed either Obama or Romney. And while it would make sense for a foreign newspaper to refrain from endorsing an American presidential candidate, Haaretz did run an editorial on November 2nd declaring that Obama is good for Israel. And we fact-checked this, and it is correct. And Saren writes on our Facebook page, in regards to the world's perspective, at the One Young World 2012 conference, 1,300 young people from 182 countries voted. 87% wished for Obama to be reelected over Governor Romney. Let me go to more of your calls. And Cecilia has something, well, about Argentina. Cecilia, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for answering my call. No, I just wanted to say, because I am from Argentina, that even if we felt a little bit offended because Obama didn't went to Argentina, there was a recent poll that showed that around 75% of the poll people were in favor of Obama. And also it was in the press, in several newspapers in Argentina, that Romney's wife holds around 1 million foreign debt bonds. So that thing didn't play on his favor too, because we are in debt with the Romneys, actually. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. And David Ayon could get a response from you.
Sure. Well, one thing is that the polls, there's a particular poll, Gallup International, which is independent from our Gallup here domestically, took in a bunch of countries, and other polls are like this, when they just simply ask people, if you had a vote, would you vote for A or B? Of course, many more people are familiar with President Obama than they are with Romney. So there's no doubt that there's far greater sympathy for the president, genuine sympathy, based on actual knowledge of both of them. But the truth is that that gets exaggerated by the fact that Romney's far less well-known than President Obama is. But I have no doubt that there's no question that in Argentina, as in Latin America in general, the popular support is on the president's side. In fact, it's so curious when you look at the polls that we have available. The only two countries in the world where you could arguably have a real, even majority support, perhaps for Romney, are an odd couple. It's Israel and Pakistan, which came up in this show.
Well, we also mentioned Chile, and I think John wants to follow up on that mention. John, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. Great program, by the way. Chile, I have lots of friends. I've been there many times and lived there. They're all seeking to be higher, more highly educated. And with Piñera, their own businessman president, they have, you know, plenty of words about Romney. They're well aware, mostly because of contact with me, too, about what Romney had to say about state-supported colleges and universities in Massachusetts, which he dreamed of dismantling. And down there, they're aware of such things. They're all pro-Obama. We're talking from junior high school kids into graduate students, many of whom have ended up coming here to California for a higher education.
Okay. I thank you for that report, John. Appreciate hearing from you. And we had to say goodbye to John Burnett from Nairobi, but Ed writes that he spent 3 months in Africa last year, and Obama and the election came up a lot. And he was told repeatedly that Africans hoped that Obama's behavior and character would rub off on their own leaders, whom they defined as corrupt. They also said to be very grateful that we in the U.S. don't have as much voter fraud. And finally, a very wise cab driver told me the biggest difference between here and there is that we have term limits. He said that anyone can deal with bad leadership for 8 years, but that in Africa it feels like forever. We have a tweet from Michelle who says, I'm a dual Australian-American citizen voting for the first time in a U.S. election tomorrow for Obama. My Twitter feed was alive with Australians watching the U.S. presidential debates. They are very well informed on U.S. politics and very pro-Obama. Another caller joining us, Nilu. Good morning. Oops. Nilu, you're on.
I arrived from Rome last week. I'm visiting my family, and they're all keeping up with the election. They're pro-Obama, and they're all showing me the 47% video from Romney.
And this was in Tehran?
Yeah, this is in Tehran, yes.
Uh-huh. And they got all the message about the 47%.
Huh? Oh yeah, everything that I've been kept up with from CNN and Fox down here, they're all on top of it. They're watching it all.
Okay, thank you for that call. You wouldn't necessarily expect that, would you, Shelby Tahami?
Oh no, I would. I mean, as one of your other commentators said, you know, certainly Americans don't follow many parts of the world very closely because they seem to be less relevant to their daily lives. I think most people know how important America is to their lives. If you're in Iran and you're assessing whether there's going to be war, what's going to happen with sanctions, what happens in America is so huge to you. Everybody's focused on America, and we see that in the Arab world as well, even though as America's role has declined, diminished,
they're very focused on it, and you can see the Arab television stations from the region sent huge crews here over the past few days. They've been reporting daily prior to the election. They're going to continue to report tomorrow all day long through the night and leaving crews here a few days after to assess the consequences. It's a huge story around the world.
It's not that huge in China, as we said earlier, because of the fact that there's a change of power going on there. As we speak, in a couple of days it'll be clear. We're going to talk about it tomorrow on the air. But Melissa Chan, I'd like to go back to you on this. Are you thinking of going back because you were kind of persona non grata? Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I was expelled from China this May, and I don't think I'll have an opportunity to get back anytime soon. Although, you know, I know that Al Jazeera English is certainly interested in returning to China to properly cover a country that is so important globally.
And one would think, again, we're so important globally to China. I mean, and we're economically symbiotic with China now. Why did they kick you out?
It's a really complicated issue I think it's a multiplicity of reasons. I could go on for about an hour, and we don't have that much time.
Can you give us an abbreviated cogent version? I'm just curious.
We were never really given a reason from the Chinese government. So, you know, it would be speculative to think. They've never made any official comment about what exactly was behind the reason, although the expulsion was the first expulsion of a foreign journalist from China in more than a decade. So that was why it was it got into the media cycle internationally briefly.
Sounds like you have
in any case.
Sounds like you have a book in you. I want to read some more online and email comments from listeners. Scott says, who's in Costa Rica, says, from here in Costa Rica, the U.S. expatriate community views the election about the same as in the U.S. However, among the Costa Ricans and other Central Americans, there is no love lost on Obama, but they view Romney with absolute horror. There are strong memories of Reagan's wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador, and the last thing Central Americans want to see is an era similar to that. The U.S. has lost a lot of prestige in this region, as was seen by the reaction of South American presidents to Obama's speech at the Cartagena summit. But Romney is viewed as being the archetype of everything that is wrong with U.S. policy in Latin America and a Ronald Reagan redux, a collective oh no. And Dan comments online, in 2008, I was passing through Germany and met with a German friend who had a very compelling reason for concern in Germany for U.S. elections. According to my friend, 70% of German natural gas originates in Russia or passes through Russian pipelines. Most is used for cooking and heating. She said there is a disturbing pattern following U.S. elections. When a Republican is elected, there tends to be more saber-rattling coming from the U.S. directed to Russia, which irritates the Russians, who then in various ways threaten to shut off natural gas that flows to Germany. I don't think I've heard a more practical reason to support one U.S. candidate or another. And by the way, I mentioned earlier that Izvestia, the Russian newspaper, has been talking about relations with Russia halting under Mitt Romney, as they were speculating on what this election would mean. Let me bring more of your calls on, and we'll go to Connie. Connie, hi.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. I wanted to just observe, my husband and I were on a business trip to Bosnia last May, and we stayed in Sarajevo. And at the restaurant where we dined, there was a life-size cardboard cutout of Bill Clinton. There's genuine adulation for Hillary Clinton. But the taxi driver who took us to the airport when we were leaving was an energetic supporter of Mitt Romney. And I just wondered if any of your guests have an observation about why that would be.
Well, let me go to Marco Werman, who is a senior producer with Public Radio International and host of the World Show. We're talking about Central Europe here, but and maybe what some cab drivers think. But what do you say, Marco?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't in the taxi, obviously, it probably depends on, you know, that one person's view of the United States. Perhaps they see the U.S. as a place of transformation, and you know, this is his take on, you know, every 4 years, you need to get a new person in there. They just need to keep things fresh. It's a tough one. I mean, there are people all over who will support Obama, and there are people outside the United States, as we saw with this poll in Pakistan, who will support Mitt Romney. One thing I wanted to kind of throw in, Shibley was talking about how, you know, people outside the United States really have to be more informed because what happens in the United States, both domestically and in terms of foreign policy, affect them. A lot of that is also about perception. So maybe that taxi driver just was kind of seeing something that he liked. I mean, if you take in Germany, a lot of Germans still remember Barack Obama's run in 2008 when he went to Berlin and Chancellor Angela Merkel denied him his request to speak at the Brandenburg Gate. But Obama went anyway to the famous Victory Column and spoke there. And that made him a rock star in the eyes of many in Germany. And, you know, there's a poll that's taken. 87% of Germans said if they could vote, they would vote for Obama. So, you know, a lot of it's about perception, I think.
Also, I don't know about cab drivers. When I was in Spain, a lot of them were kind of waxing nostalgic over the Franco days when things were more ordered and there were less drugs on the streets. So one always has to bear those kinds of things in mind. Rick writes, I think many Americans could care less about what Europeans think about our presidential choice. An honest look at European society, where most every part of the euro is close to bankruptcy, and this is with the same states being almost exclusively dependent on the U.S. for their national defense. Also, who else wants President Obama reelected? Putin? Gentleman says Cesar Chavez. I think he means Hugo. Please, let's focus on what is important and that a good choice for America. Forget about what the rest of the world thinks. Well, we're not forgetting about it. In fact, we're putting it central focus here. And let's bring one more caller in. Bill, that's you. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just kind of wanted to respond to the comments made by, I believe it was the Greek comedian. I would just venture the opinion that a couple things. First off, whether it be the different elements or components of Greek society, whether it be the government there, the business community, and certainly last but not least the people, the Greeks certainly have the ability to mess up their own economy and system without any of our help. And I will also venture to say that there I know quite a number of Europeans who basically rue the day that Greek was admitted to the European Union. I know that's not really directly related to the U.S. election, but
well, we'll let the comment stand, and we'll let it end there because we've come to the end of this hour. Thank you, Bill, and thanks to all our guests. Thanks to Marco Werman over in London and Daniel Ayon, who's with us from Los Angeles, and Shelby Talhami, who's with us from College Park, Maryland, and John Burnett, who is with us from Nairobi, and Melissa Chan with us from Stanford University campus in Palo Alto. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can continue this discussion. In fact, we join you to do so on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment, or to our Facebook page. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.